children.
Hi and welcome to Cartwheels on the Sky, Poets, Poems, and Discovery. I'm your host, Blake Moore, and for the next 30 minutes, you'll get a glimpse into the poems and process of Ukiah poet Melissa Elford Theron. Melissa Elford Theron is a cis queer human, a writer, a librarian, and a visual artist. She is the author of Field Guide to Autobiography, and 10 chapbooks, including Little Ditch and Trauma Suture. Her poems and prose have been widely published and nominated for various awards, including the Pushcart Prize and Best of the Net. Born and raised in Brooklyn, Melissa created, developed, and co-curates the SFSU Poetry Center Chapbook Exchange with Elise Ficarra. She now lives in Northern California, where she manages the Ukiah Library, curates the Loba Reading Series, and serves as the 2021 to 2023 Poet Laureate of Ukiah. Her recent work is available at www.apoetlibrarian.wordpress.com.
Hello, Melissa. It is such a pleasure to have you on Cartwheels on the Sky.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Blake. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm super excited to share you and your poetry with the listening community, the poets and lovers of poetry on the Mindanao Coast. So would you like to start us off with a poem?
Oh, sure. I'd love to. I think I'll read a poem from my first full-length collection, Field Guide to Autobiography. This is called That Time a Tree Grew Out of My Mouth and I Had Armor. Auriculars hinge, mandible. What is the mouth of a tree? Ocean. Breast, a paleo line. Thorax, my cambium. I am armor in the woods, pits, capito, petal, cartilage. Alula, little hinge, elytra, my growth rings. My tentacles, the orbital in umbo, coxa, under tail, covert, ligament. The heart is a phloem, a muscle scar, a gut of ganglia, radula along leaf margins. I graze the little points with my teeth. I draw a line.
Wow, beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want to talk a little bit about you and how poetry expresses itself in your life?
Yeah, it saved me. I imagine that's true for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really been such a life preserver for me at different times in my life. And I started writing early when I was, I'm told that I wrote a song or two when I was very little, where I would change lyrics to various commercials or things, you know, and somehow I'd get my family like recounting these new versions of jingles, you know, that I had somehow created. but it wasn't until I was about 17 that I took to writing seriously and really began to work toward writing on a regular basis. And then later, when I studied with Diane DePrima, is when I really fully dedicated myself to making more of an effort to a writing life. And that was probably I was about 29 when I began studying with Diane. So that was in about 2002.
That puts you firmly on the journey. You know, you're the librarian. Poetry and literature is very much part of your whole life.
Yeah. Yes.
You said you started taking it seriously. Did you take a while to actually call yourself a poet, or were you right away?
Yes.
Yeah, that's...
No, I was really resistant to calling myself a poet because I felt like it was... I guess I had imposter syndrome about it. So I didn't call myself a poet until... probably after I graduated from Mills and had been submitting work for probably already like 7 years or so at that point in publishing. And I finally started referring to myself as a poet, but it took quite a long time.
Why do you think that is? Because that is so true for many poets.
Yeah, it's hard to, and I imagine it varies for everyone, but
yeah,
for me it was probably a little bit of imposter syndrome, you know, feeling like, you know, I had to have a book or something before I could call myself a poet, that kind of thing. So it might have even been like around the same time that I published my first chapbook that I began to start calling or thinking of myself even. Because it starts with the thinking too, you know, how you see yourself and
right, and then also how you see poetry, right? Because if you look at poetry as, let's say, the soul language or big shoes to fill, then it makes it harder to climb that hill, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Why don't you share another poem?
Sure. Well, this is a newer poem. I've been reading a lot of books about mushrooms. And in particular, how mushrooms can transform our current climate crisis. And this is called New Biota. To be natural and occurring, internal order of a structure, fine-grained translucence, some failure, salt carvings for the landmine, geyser what cherishes, salt all the bodies, salt the wounds, to purify and extract. We are magicking through. Equinox of vortices, we salt our way. Let the coarse granules mix and cleanse. Let the clear stones light a path. We coax and glide. We move through teardrop shape. Opening, we suffuse, we crackle in the mixture, fold in like new biota or erosion, crystals rising in one fluid wash, we effervesce with its life, we heal. There is no separation, we maintain and coalesce, we part and whole, clover and cup.
Beautiful. Are you a wild mushroom hunter?
I have not yet been, no, I haven't, but I'm really curious to learn more about harvesting mushrooms and maybe doing one of those really cool walks that they do through Mendocino College and learning more.
It's such a magic life in the forest, and that you just tied that all in with this other side of the magic life, and it's, you know, the fruiting bodies of that mycelia and that thread that does so much for all of us. It's just an incredible experience. One of my favorite things about winter on the coast is putting on my waterproof clothing and getting in my belly and just in the duff finding mushrooms and crawling under madrone and manzanita. And it's incredible. And then you come home and you've got all this food to eat.
That sounds like wonderful.
Fairy world. You just feel like this is the most incredible, like the earth is giving me this, and it's really special.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate. I lived on a mycologist property twice in my life, and the first time was in 97, and on this coast it was very wet. My first year mushrooming, I got to experience 17 different varieties of edible mushrooms. So being with someone who was so capable of identifying and was an expert, it really was a very fast, accelerated learning opportunity to the point where there's a lot of mushrooms I feel comfortable and safe both harvesting and eating and even sharing with people. So that's really nice to have that skill.
Yeah. I hope to, you know, be able to learn more. You know, there's so much that I'm still learning about different ecosystems, and you know, having grown up in Brooklyn, you know, my my environment was very different than you know, a Californian the ecologies in California, and so I'm really fascinated by just all the many ways that we can transform and heal through all of these natural processes.
How did you get from Brooklyn to Ukiah? That's quite a unexpected transition.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's a kind of a long story, but I'll try to condense it. When I came out to California to backpack around when I graduated undergrad, and I was about 25. It took me quite a long time because I put myself through school, and I was the first person in my family to go to college, and so there wasn't a whole lot of financial support there, and so it took me quite a while. And so when I graduated, it was a really major deal. So after it was maybe like 2 years after I graduated, I went out to California and backpacked around by myself for a while, and I got lost when I took the I got stranded by the Greyhound bus in the middle of like near Bakersfield somewhere because I went to go to it was at a rest stop and I had. I had this real need to go eat Taco Bell, and that was not where the bus was. And so I was late returning to the bus from getting my Taco Bell. And I was stranded there and had quite a long time before the next bus came. I had about 6 hours for the next bus to really, like, ponder what I was going to do with my life. And I called my brother up from a payphone and said, you know, hey, I'm going to move to California. And he said, great, if you wait a year, I'll come with you. And because he had to graduate from his own undergrad program. And so I did, and a year later, to the day, pretty much, it was our first day, you know, we drove out to California from the East Coast. And that's how I got to San Francisco. And I was there for 15 years. And it was later on, when my son was about 2, I went back to school to get my library science degree, my MLIS. And when I graduated in, 2012, it was December of 2012, I looked for jobs, and it was extremely competitive, particularly at that time. And I was very fortunate after about a year of assiduously job searching while I was still working full-time at my other job, that this opening was available in Ukiah. And it was the perfect fit for me because not only was I able to work as a librarian, which was my bucket list life goal from when I was a little kid that I had, you know, somehow gotten off track when I was older. So it took me quite a while to come back around to it. And I began working at the Ukiah branch in the spring of 2014 as the teen and adult services librarian. And the branch manager at that time, Eliza Wingate, very graciously made me the library liaison to the Poet Laureate Committee. And so, you know, because she was very excited about my love of poetry,
right,
and my background in poetry, and connected me with the committee. And so since that time, I've been the library liaison, and here we are, almost 7 years later, and now I serve as the branch librarian.
Now you're the branch librarian. Uh-huh. So mm-hmm. Did she retire?
She did, yeah.
Yeah.
It was shortly after I started, maybe about 6 months after I started, she retired.
Right. Now you are the Poet Laureate of Ukiah.
Yes.
That's pretty exciting.
I think it is.
Uh-huh. I think it is, too. How do you feel being on the other side of that? I assume you had to recuse yourself in the deliberation for the choice of Poet Laureate.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Yeah. It's really wonderful. You know, it's been great to be part of the cycle of that too. And, you know, seeing all the different ins and outs of how the committee works. And then also, you know, being part of the judging panel for the Haiku Festival for just, you know, a couple of years, I was able to do it. And seeing, you know, just how the committee works and getting to know everyone and cycle through has been really cool.
I want to take a quick moment to remind you that you're listening to Cartwheels on the Sky, and this is Blake Moore interviewing Ukiah Poet Laureate and Branch Librarian Melissa L.F. Therion.
Do you have special responsibilities as the poet laureate?
In terms of the committee?
No, you know, in terms of your own, your person now, your role as the poet laureate.
Oh, I have a lot of projects in mind. I would really love to see, you know, my whole, like, overarching goal is to destigmatize poetry for the larger community, mm-hmm. You know, and that's the lofty goal, obviously, but that's my overarching goal. Like, I want people generally to see that poetry is not about this, like, pie in the sky, highfalutin language. Poetry is can be anything that serves you.
Right.
Yeah. So that's my overarching goal, and I have a couple of projects in mind, and hopefully after COVID finally goes away, I'll be able to take on some of these projects.
Uh huh. Have a little bit more freedom to put things in action outside of virtual.
Yeah.
I think it's funny because, you know, what you say is to destigmatize poetry, and I'm going to ask you something that people probably don't ask you enough, but would you read me a poem? And, you know, I mean, I think that's so true because I don't know if it happens to you, but I know it's happened to me many times in my life where I'll say, hey, can I read a poem? And you just feel like a certain energy. I mean, now, of course, everyone who's in my life, they welcome it. But there's been times in my life where, you know, you just see everybody glaze over and like, oh, God, I hate poetry. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Or, definitely. You know, you definitely, once you find other poets who you can be more free about that kind of thing with, you know, you find your people because it's not just anyone that will want to listen to a poem.
Right. But I think most people that are in my close circle all know that you just never know. There's going to be a poem sometime. So people are very indulgent of me in that sense. I appreciate that. I just wrote a poem recently that I put it on my phone and just about everyone I'm running into at the Cove, hey, can I share a poem? I've just been really enjoying. It's like poem bombing.
I like that poem bombing this week.
Okay, so your turn.
Yeah. Sure. I will read a poem. This is a poem that appears in one of my chapbooks. That it came out in 2018 from Above Ground Press. It is called Little Ditch, and the poem is called Ammonite Sonnet. The ammonite, an index of sutures. I got tired of cataloging them, hermetically sealing little traumas, afraid they'd get to know one another, go boom. Little mother catastrophes. Instead, I smashed little rocks to bits in a ditch. Each shard, a memory, released pressure. From stomach, the common burial ground, the cavity of accumulation. Each little box coated in dust and feelings. Each glass stone chamber, not really secret. I get ready to shatter the discretions. I open my palms. No explosion, no pain. Coalesce, little traumas. Wrap your wounds around each other. A chrysalis, blood. A becoming of feathers, of air, of fire.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Just love to let that sit for a while and reverberate through the airwaves so we all can feel that. Poetry is such a blessing because that's how I feel mm-hmm. about it. Just that moment to stop, feel, and listen. Do you have specific times when you write or a particular thing that motivates you? Are you disciplined? What's your writing practice?
Yeah. Until recently, it was, you know, when something struck me and then, you know, I would typically write things down in any, you know, in fragments, you know, in the margins, being, you know, somebody who's working full time and racing around taking care of my kid. And But lately, for the last few months, I have started a very casual writing group for women that meets over Zoom once a week. And it's really been incredibly fortifying for me, and I'm told from the other attendees as well. It's sort of a drop-in group, and I've been generating quite a few poems from that group. We don't have any planned activities, but beginning each workshop, I'll just draw a card from the tarot, and we write off of that card. And so now I have a new series that are based around the tarot. So that's one series I'm working on. And then I have, I play with field guides a lot, where I use found language from field guides. And I like to sort of jump off of ideas in the field guides for to create poems. So I tend to use a lot of found and cut up and collage techniques for my poems, or it'll be inspired by something that I'm reading. So I try to find poetry anywhere.
Right. So when you write from a field guide, do you just find something from nature and then write from that? What does that mean, writing from a field guide?
Yeah. Well, I mean, with field guides to autobiography, I use field guides more frequently than I've been using them. But, well, that's not true, because in the book that I just finished called Gaslight Gutter Rainbows, that's not published yet, but I'm shopping it around right now, I used field guides for that too, based on, but for totally different purposes. Like the most recent collection features field guides on rocks and minerals, whereas Field Guide to Autobiography use language from different field guides that are either about shells or birds or insects, a lot of insects. And essentially what I tried to do with Field Guide to Autobiography was just hone in on one animal or one phylum, and really begin to like identify different characteristics about it, but then also try to illustrate this being behind all of these different criteria or characteristics that are used for identification purposes, and try to like really get at the feeling of what that creature represents or what that creature is. But then also it's more about like a series of transformations of a human being. You know, so it's a memoir through the lens of these different organisms also. But so that's part of how I've used field guides. I use them in all different ways.
Interesting. I love it. When I saw the name of one of your collections, I was very intrigued by it. And that was your first collection?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, we are unfortunately about out of time, and I want to make sure that listeners know how to find you so they can find these poems in your books and read more about you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my Field Guide to Autobiography is available at the Mendocino Book Company, and it's also available for borrowing through the Mendocino County Library and a few other libraries. And I have a website. It's apoetlibrarian.wordpress.com that has all of the poems that I've published to date that you can read or listen to. And there's also, you know, if you want to get in touch with me, you can do that through the website as well.
Perfect. Do you want to take us out with one more poem?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. I will read... I'll read another poem that I wrote more recently. It's called Impatient Liminal. The pauses and interludes and mesoganglia and parenchyma leave breathing space enough to weave the phosphorus and nitrogen otherwise, how to float, make movable, experience, transformational, imaginal, transimaginal poetics, liminal and braiding ecologies of understanding, the interrelatedness, interrelationship of beings in practice, in joy, and community. If we all shine on, we make radiant music. There's so much more than that brutal gray retaining wall. These synaptic fields emit memory as imaginal proteins. The sugars make the fabric.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Perfect way to end. Well, thank you so much for a wonderful conversation.
Thank you so much, Blake. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I'm looking forward to listening to it.
And that concludes my interview with Melissa Eleftheron, the current Poet Laureate of Ukiah and also the branch librarian in Ukiah. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did and her fabulous poetry. Again, you can learn more about her work at apoetlibrarian.wordpress.com. And you've been listening to Cartwheels on the Sky. I'm your host, Blake Moore, and I want to thank you so much for listening this evening. Stay tuned for more fabulous programming right here on KGUA FM Wallala. I'm going to end today's show with the voice of a youth poet, Claire Livingston, a sophomore at Anderson Valley High School. She wrote this poem in late 2020 in a classroom that I was working in. And I'm just wishing you all the very, very best. Thanks for listening.
I hope, I wish, there is a reason for it. Everything has a purpose is a phrase that usually irritates me. Used as an excuse or a dismissal of someone's plea for help. I wish desperately that it has a purpose now, though. Maybe the universe has had enough of us. It is the parent, tired of a toddler. We have been drawing on our walls, refusing to share. Assuming our beloved toys will always be ours, not going to bed, not eating our food, hurting ourselves because we have become consumed by our blissful emotions, so we get a scare because nothing gentle or reasonable seems to work. COVID, poverty, wildfires, hurricanes, homeless, jobless, racism, corruption. The higher power of us has been delivering a series of 1-2 punches to knock the humanity back into us. I hope. I wish.